thank you for joining us again on the Inspire Health podcast. And in today's episode, we are talking with Howard Hinman. Howard's a senior paralegal who's one of the foremost educators on the irrevocable common law trust. And this is something that Tay and I actually started to look into. And this was after your father recently passed away, and we were sort of traversing all of the administrative stuff around the will and all the stuff that goes on with that, and just thinking there's got to be other options to deal with stuff. And that basically started us on the pathway of reading a book called The Art of Passing the Buck. And through that, we basically came into Howard's work. And for those people that might be wondering again, why are we talking about trusts on a health podcast? But this episode falls
specifically
within,
on the Living Freely series.
Well, that's what I was going to say. This episode falls within our series on Living Freely, where we've talked to a large group of people rounding out this concept of living freely. And what we kind of found was that it really is an important conversation to have around how do we actually preserve and create some security around one's wealth, property, holdings for themselves, but also for their future generations. So we thought this was a really timely conversation to have. And when we came across Howard, he blessed us with the opportunity to speak with him to share his insights around something specifically called an irrevocable common law trust. And we're going to break down the concept of trust, and then we'll get into this in more detail, because this is a really potentially powerful trust that people can utilize. And before we start up, I'm just going to mention that this conversation is not legal advice. We're not lawyers. It's for educational and entertainment purposes only. Please do your due diligence and consult with a professional if you plan to explore the information within this podcast in more detail on your own. The same is for anything we talk about with health. All right, Howard, welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us on this series.
My pleasure. Let me make a slight clarification that nothing in this talk or any of my talks is ever to be construed as financial investment, legal and or tax advice, or typically unless identified political and or sports thoughts. The other thing is, I am not actually one of the approximately 13 contributors to The Art of Passing the Buck, Volume 1 and Volume 2, which you've very graciously shown. There are others who contributed. I was not with any of the trust when that book was written. After FYI.
Very good.
However, I have read both books many times.
I am sure. Howard, I thought maybe we could kick this off with, you know, from our experience, we started to come into this process and looking into this and researching this more after the passing of Taya's father. So maybe I can get you to just sort of explain what kind of typically happens when someone passes, and why might, you know, where are some of the stumbling blocks and the challenges that can sort of come up as to why someone might even be interested in looking at other avenues?
Other than a will.
On our website, www.passingbucks.com, we have an article by Gwen Wyckoff about one of our departed fellows, Frank Ozak. And this is actually his chair I'm sitting in. I inherited from him. And it's called Good to Go. And it discusses the things that are required. In the United States, and this is again solely as a paralegal, it would be what's called a pour-over will, some sort of a trust, a durable power of attorney generally, and a durable power of attorney for medical care. Those are the four critical items. They're discussed in some detail. You can make it yourself, hire a paralegal, hire an attorney, whatever. I can assure you that from personal experience, that when someone goes, even if expected, because Frank took 3 years to pass away from bone cancer, with a knockdown drag out. 6 months later, we're going, Frank knew how to do that. How do we do that? It is, when you lose someone who's important to you, when someone's close to you, it is an enormous hit, no matter what. And what proper planning can do, it can reduce the trauma. That's the whole point is, look, unfortunately, people that currently have lifespans, if they're lucky, 80, 100, they're really like 120 years. That's it. they're going to be gone. And it's simply a reality. Well, that is my response to your first question.
You know, we did a conversation. I can't remember the name of it. I'll see if I can pull up the episode. But we did a in a series we did called Life, Death, and Beyond, Exploring Our Greater Reality. We talked to a lot of people around this concept of passing, people that have had near-death experiences, et cetera, and come back. But one of the people in that actually talked about the importance of having all of those conversations with loved ones prior and actually really setting everything up. Because the reality is when someone passes, if it's not set up, you're just not in the right headspace to be able to have to deal with everything. And there's a lot, and it can be overwhelming, and you're trying to then do this stuff while you're grieving. So I definitely think getting that stuff and having those conversations ahead of time is really important. I mean, we've both seen that from being on the other side of not having those conversations when loved ones have passed, and just the stuff that you're going, oh, I wish we put that stuff all together early on.
I don't know if this is behind our paywall or if it's on the freebie section. However, our first trustee, John Kettler, has a situation where it was the Danish shopping magnate equivalent, like of a Harrods or something in London. And his folks went to Sri Lanka. And this guy went, and like three of the four kids or two of the three kids went in those Easter bombings a few years back. Bang, gone. And this guy, I guess, was supposedly the largest landowner in Scotland, or as individual owner. But can you imagine what chaos that causes? Even if you have, because that means your succession succession's already all of a sudden gone. You never know when there's going to be an auto accident or something. For instance, one of the things that's on our website is there's a presentation or two by a lady named Jackie Figg. Jacqueline Figg, and she was from jolly old England, and she went in Northern California, and she was killed with four people in a small plane crash up in Northern California. Gone. Unfortunately, these things happen. There's auto accidents, there's boating accidents. So it's important that you be prepared. It's really important. Any planning is better than nothing, and better planning is always best.
Howard, how did you first come into the awareness around trusts and really become interested enough and to start to actually support other people on how I'm setting up their own trusts?
I have a background as a transactional paralegal, specializing in real estate, intellectual property, and IT contracts. And I've dealt with trademarks, copyrights, patents, etc. I came across trusts in the area of estate planning. Specifically, I have worked on irrevocable common law trust in the Cook Islands, the Isle of Man, Gibraltar, and I think one of the Channel Islands in my life. And I've also worked on irrevocable common law trust in the United States of America, and also more recently in the British Overseas Territory of Anguilla, which I helped a guy who was doing some work in setting up something in Panama and was going to title it through an Anguilla trust. So I worked in this field for some years, probably since, let's say it's pushing 35 years.
So we've talked, the term irrevocable common law trust has come up a few times. For many of the people, the viewers that are unfamiliar with trusts in general, can you give us a little overview of the irrevocable common law trust and how it differs from other types of trusts? Maybe even just to normalize the term trust, like a lot of times I think people probably aren't even aware of how commonly used trusts are, like whether from the government has multiple types of trusts that they use right up to the uber wealthy. Can you give us just a little background on trusts in general, and then we can break down this irrevocable common law, kind of like the king's trust
or the emperor's trust. A trust goes back, and this is in The Art of Passing the Buck, Volume 1, which is the green cover. You put up the blue cover, which is the Volume 2. These occurred when Roman warriors would go off to battle, and they would entrust the care of their estates to a trusted friend. And then they come forward to England, where they were used during the Crusades. And then they come to the New World and the United States and Canada. Well, that's how they come forward. To kind of expand upon that, there are approximately 17 different types of trust in common use. There'd be your testamentary trust from a last will and testament. For instance, the Social Security Trust Fund of the United States of America is a trust. I'm familiar with the American Battlefield Trust, which is dedicated to preserving Civil War types of battlefields, etc. I myself grew up in Anaheim, California. I was born in Orange, grew up in Anaheim. And before it went bankrupt, the cemetery, the old Anaheim Cemetery, which was at the end of our block, although that's fronted on the old major street over, it actually was run by a trust until it went bankrupt and the county took it over. That's, again, there's trusts are common everywhere. For instance, here in Las Vegas, the Teamsters Pension Fund, which is invested in many of the casinos, that's a trust.
You know, Howard, it's funny because it seems like it's commonly used all over the place, except for the average living human being. Most people do not use trusts. Like, in your experience, where do you see trusts being used by the average person?
They will have a last will and testament. They may have a basic grantor or family trust. And this is where the difference is because the statutory trust, whether it's revocable or irrevocable, is a creature of statute, whereas the irrevocable common law trust is based on the common law and therefore can be used with variations in pretty much every common law country in the world. And in some civil law countries, if they allow you to import civil law schemes. For instance, we have never had someone successfully use one of these trusts in Quebec because right. Because it's civil law.
Yeah. Even whereas though all of Canada is common law, except for Quebec, which is civil law.
Right. And then because the United States is under a constitution and recognizing the right of contract, Article 1, Section 10, even though in Louisiana is civil law, you can use an irrevocable common law trust solely as a paralegal in Louisiana. I personally know of trusts in New Zealand, Australia, the ones I mentioned earlier, and United Kingdom, and more common, most of our best clients over the years are out of the Republic of Ireland.
Interesting. So, Howard, why would someone want to trust? Like, for the person out there that is listening to this and trusts are new and they've got everything in just their name and their bank account or anything along those lines, what's the benefit? Why would someone even start to consider trust as an option?
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at. And with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink, perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active, available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Without giving any tax advice, there may be financial advantages. The most important thing is privacy, because it splits title between the equitable title, which is held by the beneficiaries, and the legal title, which is held by the trustees. And as Gwen Wyckoff would say, the most important thing of each and every trust is to benefit the beneficiaries. All trusts exist to benefit the beneficiaries.
And in relation to that around privacy, just because I think this has come up a lot for people right now, a lot of people are just trying to figure out they're just not trusting the climate that's going on in the world at the moment. They're trying to figure out how do they create some more protection of their estate in different ways. What kind of protection can that provide? Can a, say particularly like an irrevocable common law trust, as far as
that would be different from a simple will,
yeah, or even like just your own account or something like that. You have money in account, as far as things bankruptcy or lawsuits or creditors,
for instance, in a statutory trust, some jurisdictions require the names and locations of the beneficiaries to be published. You can see where that could lead. For instance, I have been informed, or it's rumored, that enterprising gentlemen will note that, gee, there's an heiress been born. I think I better check on her when she goes to college or university. And that is covered in Gwen's article, Romance and Trust, which is also on the website.
So what is an irrevocable common law trust?
An irrevocable common law trust is like any other trust. A trust has essentially these components. It has a corpus, which is initially started by a grantor, creator, trustor, all these are synonyms. And then it's managed by trustees and staff. Again, for the benefit of the beneficiaries.
So the difference between revocable versus irrevocable.
Revocable means it can be revoked, and most typical trusts are revoked. Irrevocable means it is basically, it's set, the personnel change. However, it's very important that you do a due diligence and say, this is exactly what I want to have happen. Here's what I want to set up. And although I personally find certain items of trust distasteful, the courts do uphold unpopular opinions, positions in trusts. In other words, cutting somebody out of as a beneficiary, or making them a minimal beneficiary because they've offended the grantor in some way. Although I can assure you that we strongly counsel against that sort of thing. In other words, petty vindictiveness is not a good thing to do with your estate. Unwise.
And the key players involved in a trust, I believe you need a grantor, you need a trustee, and then a beneficiary. Can you just outline the process of that and how that's set up and maybe how that is different within this irrevocable common law trust versus other trusts?
The critical item, which I stress always, is you want five or six good people around you, no closer, at least in North America, than a first cousin. Because the certain powers that are fond of saying that you have, they always want to make it a grantor trust. They're always looking to do that. Again, solely as paralegal. So you want to have, again, one grantor to start with. You would then have ideally two, preferably three trustees, one or more beneficiaries. We recommend that every trust have at least one small charitable beneficiary that's established. In other words, if worse comes to worse and all your living beneficiaries were to be wiped out, then at least you have one charitable beneficiary, and then you can do an amendment or something to add more beneficiaries or by rights of succession, heirs and assigns, etc. So basically, we recommend things like, if you like these, Scouting, USA, Girl Scouts of America, again, the American Battlefield Trust, Wounded Warriors down here. I'm a member of Toastmasters International. I might recommend Toastmasters International for between, again, one and five trust capital units. Well, that's the beneficiaries. Then you would have your general manager. The general manager is the person decide to have, who is the revenue producer, preferably several assistant general managers, bookkeeper and assistant bookkeepers, never the A word, because that puts you under, at least in around here, their jurisdiction. And then you would have a trust protector, which is something new in trust in the last 50, 60 years. That's a new item. The trust protector is assigned by the creator to be the sort of the referee to make sure everything's going according to plan. That is your basic personnel of an irrevocable common law trust.
Who is this not for, Howard? Like, when would it not make sense for someone to set up a trust? Like, are there, the way you're describing it, it almost sounds like you need to have perhaps assets to tend to and take care of, and that would be beneficial to have.
And enough people that you can actually trust to work with you.
Yeah. Basically, to properly run an irrevocable common law trust, the way I'm describing, you require a cash flow of between, at least, and this is U.S., $6,000 and $10,000 per month. So this type of thing is ideal for small businesses, ranchers, and farmers who want to make sure that their asset can stay in the family or whatever, because we all know that inheritance taxes are going to go way up. In fact, solely as a paralegal, I will predict you're going to see inheritance taxes in the United States and Canada soar. You're probably also going to see some sort of a wealth tax by one form or another. And that is no matter who wins in November, because the powers that are squeezed. And when they squeeze, and when they get desperate, they will not only debase the currency, they will look to squeeze people for more money.
So that's a big one out here. I know there's been a lot of farmers being pressed in lots of different ways out here in British Columbia and Canada. And I often think, like, there's got to be another way that they can protect their assets. So outside of when someone dies and then all of the taxes that go on with that, during the time that they are living, and how does it still protect them in some ways to have things in a trust as opposed to just in their name?
Liability, because the trustees are responsible to defend the corpus.
Can you give an example of how that might play out, like a scenario where that might protect somebody?
For instance, you're from, and I'm, this is, Gwen uses this. There was years ago, I was not born yet, and I don't think you two nice folks were born yet. There was a, in the late 1940s in San Marino, California, and this is in, and Gwen talks about this in a good way. There was a water well in San Marino, and some young lady, I believe her name was Kathy Fiscus, fell down it. And so they basically attempted to drill a parallel shaft or something. And a fellow who was on the L.A. fixture for years, his name was Stan Chambers. He's also no longer with us. And they were doing round-the-clock TV coverage and probably radio as well. And this was the big thing. Unfortunately, she expired before they could get to her. So Gwen's example is of a family that had three oil wells and put them in three separate trusts. In her example, someone falls down the oil well and they lose the one oil well. Now, let me give you a real life example on a bigger scale. The Buss family still owns the Los Angeles Lakers, and I think Staples Center downtown Los Angeles. I guess the Buss family no longer owns the Los Angeles Kings hockey team, which would play against the Vancouver Canucks on a regular basis. Essentially, you have a situation where Dr. Jerry Buss, who's been gone for like 15 years now, probably, was a chemical engineer in Phoenix. He made his money in commercial real estate. He put every one of his office buildings in a separate corporation. Because, in other words, if there was a problem with one building, they could not have a domino effect. What you do not, what you want to avoid in your life is a domino effect where there's something horrible happens over here and there's a cascade effect and it wipes you out. That's what a trust can do. And in fact, a properly structured series of trusts, as we discuss in volume one, volume two, and our premium subscription newsletter available on our website. And this is all basic estate planning techniques.
Howard, what if someone's only asset, a family's only asset, is basically their house? Is this a beneficial thing to set up, a trust?
Sure, because you have liability issues. A trust is both an investment, hopefully, and it's a liability item. It's not as liability as a moving object. However, I knew somebody who, this was back in Orange County, California years ago, neighbor comes over, slips, knocks some teeth out. You have a liability claim. Now, fortunately, everybody knew what they were doing, and they call insurance companies. Oh, you've got a liability. Let's get you to the dentist, et cetera, et cetera. And this was settled amicably because it was a nice neighbor. Suppose it wasn't a nice neighbor. Suppose there's a problem. Again, you want to avoid a cascade effect where they get your house and they get your bank accounts. Because as we all know it, this, both the United States and Canada, which is not true in every common law country, is essentially a country run for the, those two countries run for the benefit solely as a paralegal of the trial attorneys. And you never know when you're going to be sued, and you never know when there's going to be some kind of a very large judgment against you. That's not true in places like the Cook Islands, for instance. You're not allowed to have contingency arrangements in some of the common law countries.
Howard, how is it different than, say, a corporation then, or an LLC, and the protection that you would get from that?
A corporation, LLC, limited partnership, is a creature of the political government and may be amended anytime the legislature's in session, or in your case, it would be the Houses of Parliament, or the court decides to make a ruling. Or sometimes, at least in the United States, by executive action. For instance, in 1933, first with gold and next with silver, Franklin Delano Roosevelt confiscated all the precious metals. Actually, you were required to turn it over for a piece of paper. So they are actually to 1934, $20 gold pieces that exist. And one was, and one showed up, and the person brought it forward, and it was tied up in court for years.
So you bring up an interesting point then with the difference with that. This is then the difference between private and public as well. And I'm wondering if you can just shed a little bit of a light on that too, because this specific type of trust, I mean, even within trust, you could have a statutory trust, but that's still based on statutes that if they change the rules on that, then those trusts have to follow suit. How is the irrevocable common law trust different in that it's a private trust? Can you explain sort of the difference between that in regards to private and public?
Right.
And that can be important.
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck. Fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are strictly in the education business. However, we are fully aware that many of our people interested in this come from what we call the Patriot Movement, and we wish them well, et cetera, et cetera. The trust, your local common law trust, is the bridge between the public and the private through the trustees. Because basically, it lets you set up bank and other financial institutions or accounts, a brokerage account, whatever. You basically, if you're strictly in the private without this bridge, you are essentially operating in the cash economy. I know of a gentleman right here in Las Vegas that he's all cash. He gets his check and he cashes it at a casino and that's it. No bank account. Really limits the fellow.
It makes me think of Dr. Sherry Tenpenny when we were talking to her about, you know, declaring sovereignty, correcting our status, and figuring out how to live in the private. And she said, well, if you're living on your property, sitting on your rocking chair, you have your dog and you got your gun, maybe that can work.
But she said it can get pretty difficult if you're not merging mm-hmm. somehow the private and the public and knowing how to interface between the two different areas.
Yeah. It would be difficult to do that if you're out in your fine part of the world or somewhere in Alaska someplace. Maybe you can do it. I do not think it's realistic for most small business people. I just do not think it's realistic because you're going to have people that are going to want to give you checks or send you payments electronically, something like that. it's difficult to even, I mean, because Las Vegas will let you, you can cash it. If you have ID, you can cash check almost any casino in this town. Mm. We're lucky that way. It's really difficult to operate with a bank account.
Yeah.
Not impossible.
Howard, are there any limitations as the types of assets that can be transferred into an irrevocable common law trust, or like any restrictions or implications that people need to be mindful of?
Again, solely as a paralegal, typically it's because these are creatures of statute, things like professional corporations, accountants, doctors, etc., really do not fit there. Although we have had doctors approach us for their to set up irrevocable common law trust for their investments, that's different. Anything that requires a license of any sort is probably not appropriate. I do know, as it happens, that there's a group in New Mexico that we've had contact with. In fact, we sent them a complimentary volume one. They help people set up gun trusts. So you can actually, you can put your families in the United States. I understand there's a way you can put your guns in a trust for the family's benefit.
So they just have this big stockhold.
Might come in handy this next little while.
May we not come to that. I would rather I'd rather we have harmony, abundance, and not chaos and violence. Much rather have the former than the latter.
Any misconceptions that people have around common law trusts or irrevocable trusts that you've come across?
The biggest thing is that they think you require a college degree or an advanced degree to do it. Basically, if you have some common sense, our books are written at approximately the eighth through ninth grade level. They're not difficult. Our and all our pros would be no more than high school. In other words, if you have a good working command of the English language, you can understand an irrevocable common law trust. And it does, it also helps to have a little bit of math skills. Add, subtract, multiply, and divide. No advanced calculus is required.
This is the picture of that first book that Howard's talking about, the passing the buck.
So are the books set up in a way that if someone were to read them, it would allow them to become knowledgeable enough to stand on their own 2 feet and know what they're setting up and how to go about setting it up?
If you also get the premium subscription newsletter and study the videos, you will have a very good idea. Now, we are not currently permitted by the terms of a consent decree to sell completed trusts. We are working on a way that you'll be able to have workshops and fill in the blanks. Kind of paint by the numbers sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that's sort of how a lot of things are starting to happen now, that are even like with some of the work around PMAs and stuff like that even.
Sorry, what's the reason as to why it's not set up that way as yet, as far as people being able to kind of download it and fill in the blanks type of thing?
Because we just realized that there was a way we could do it. We thought for you, and that's the editorial we, and I was also, we thought the consent decree prevented us from doing any work in that fashion. However, we've had a JD recently look at the consent decree again and say, wait a minute, if you do it this way, we might be able to do it. We're not there yet. However, we're very excited about the possibility of doing this.
Great.
So what is the part though that then was originally they were saying that you weren't allowed to do it? What was the part that would not allow you guys to do that?
Yeah, we're not allowed to give advice, anything beyond the most general on the T word. And also Gwen and Frank were specifically prohibited for being trustees or protector for any trust beyond themselves. That's specific to them. That wasn't specific as far as we can tell anybody else. So that had been misread over the years.
So the T word being the three letter T word.
Yes. With an A in the middle, yes.
Thank you.
I think people can figure that one out at this point. With an irrevocable trust, now usually that basically says, like, once that's set, like, it's set in stone. Is there any movability in that, like, as far as in terms of amendments or control, or is it truly set in stone?
Behind the paywall, and this is why you want to buy a premium subscription newsletter, Gwen Wyckoff has an article discussing how you may be able to fudge that. Worst comes to worst, if everything goes to Hades, what you do is you do a restatement. And it's just typically this requires the approval of all the beneficiaries, all the trust officers, the protector, and all the beneficiaries. If they discover there has been some error that was not seen and is essentially fatal to the purposes of the trust, then it's possible sometimes to do a restatement and simply decant, as our first trustee, John Kettler, would say, everything from the old trust to the new trust. Hopefully that just never happened.
So you were speaking on private versus public, and this is for the audience who's listening in. This is why Howard too is mentioning behind the paywall, that in that not everything can be discussed publicly. So it's important that if you're really looking to get a better understanding of the processes involved, that you do step into the private for further information to be discussed there.
As we all know, there are things that you can talk about on Rumble that you cannot talk about on YouTube.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's simply the way it is. And again, the private membership association is an extremely powerful tool for people, because that, at least in the United States, puts you behind a First Amendment barrier. Not perfect, better than nothing. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we've been seeing lots of bylaws and laws specifically being passed that challenge our ability to speak freely, speak with integrity. So to go into the private and have members be a part of our community has been the way that we've been able to continue doing what we've been doing. But it essentially requires support. It definitely requires a community.
Five or six people, no closer than a first cousin. This is the biggest issue. Is I ask these people all the time, do you have a group around you that you can trust? And that's the critical item. Let me go off a little whatever. There are some states in this parts of this country apparently where it's illegal for me to say, in the human species there are exactly two genders, male and female. That's it. That is now apparently verboten in some places in the United States, and I guess in the European Union. That is a denial of reality. And as Ayn Rand said, you can ignore reality, you cannot ignore the consequences of reality.
Yes, the censorship has been fierce, and they're definitely dictating what's acceptable, what's not, what's appropriate, what's not. And all the more reason for us to be able to figure out how to continue having these important conversations to share and inform the masses.
Yeah, and for viewers, you know, when you come across something that resonates with you, then right now, I think it's really important that we, wherever we focus our time, energy, and money, that's what we are going to create more of. So it's like, if you find things that you resonate with, support those and be aware of what you don't want to support anymore and see if you can find the alternatives. Howard, one thing I wanted to ask you about too was, because with trust, I mean, trusts are a really powerful tool that a lot of the uber wealthy have used to keep wealth within their family and through their generations. How can a trust be used for securing generational wealth, you know, not just for ourselves, but even for the next generations within the families?
In my, I think it's my one of my Toastmaster meetings, I talk about rags to riches to rags in three generations. The first generation makes the money. The second generation squanders the money. And the third generation starts out in rags again. The goal of the Earl Oakham Common Law Trust is to give you the personnel, procedures, and the resources to give your family perpetual wealth. And Gwen talks about that in her 2012, it's actually December 17th, 2012, presentation to Carl Hess Club called Family Synergy, which is the magic fairy which gives you the gift of perpetual wealth. And you get the gift of perpetual wealth, or the present of perpetual wealth, by proper, again, personnel, procedures, and resources. And that's the secret. And that's what, and that through the training and mentoring, which the uber wealthy, the Kennedys, the Harrimans, the Rockefellers, etc., and of course, across the pond, the Rothschilds, they get that. They get that from a young age. But that's one of the things I did not have until I found Toastmasters many years. I did not have good mentors. It's very important that you have good mentors as you're getting into teenage years.
Well, you would need to, because that would support you in finding the right personnel as well, and being in the circles where you start to connect. So that's a good point, because I could see where a lot of people be like, okay, I don't know. I don't know who I would have to be the personnel that would be able to drive the ability to create finances coming into the trust and being right. able to make it profitable. So where do people even begin to start if they don't have somebody, but they like the idea of this? Where do they start to maybe build a network where they would be able to put something like this in place?
Look for the best people you can find. I personally have found some of my best people through Toastmasters. Those are probably the best people I know. I mean, I know people have found good people through the Rotary Club, things like that. In other words, find high achievers and associate with them. In fact, some relative said, associate with the best people that you can, Howard, and gamble that some of it will rub off. Always associate with the highest quality people you can possibly associate with, all the time. Keep looking for the highest common denominator.
Well, and the people that would be running or operating that as the trustees, they also have a vested interest in it. When the trust is doing well, they often get, they will get paid more for doing a good job for the trust, correct?
In an irrevocable common law trust, the trustees have 51%. To be a proper structured, in North America at least, irrevocable common law trust, the trustees have 51%. Typically, the first trustee has the most, the second trustee have a little bit less, the third trustee would have a smaller amount.
And sorry, one thing, and they're bound though through the trust indenture to benefit the beneficiary. That's
right.
Where they can't take advantage of it.
Right. Their goal is to build a trust, provide benefits for the beneficiary, and also to fill up what their specific goals of the trust are. For instance, the American Battlefield Trust has a specific trust to help preserve and enhance Civil War battlefields in the United States of America. I know people that set up trust for the benefit of the music program at a local high school. I know of those two have existed. I think I actually helped make one.
Howard, I guess a practical basic question. If the assets are in a trust and the owner wants to sell the property, is that property still protected, and does it carry any asset protection over to the next property that is purchased or the next asset that is purchased through the sale of that property? I'm not sure if that's a clear answer, but I'm just...
I think I can interpret your question. Basically, once the property is transferred into the trust,
the trust
owns the property. Proper trust structuring dictates that every liability producing item, solely as a paralegal, is in a separate trust, as my example with the water wells, the oil wells, and the corporations of Jerry Buss with the office buildings. In other words, each piece of property, unless it's simply vacant land, in which case, if you have a trust that has vacant land, you can put all the vacant land in one trust, or a number of the parcels in one trust, because it's sitting there. If it's an active property that's being rented out, that goes as its own separate sub-trust. And again, solely as a paralegal, it's important that all the trusts have at least one different beneficiary and one different trustee, because again, solely as a paralegal in North America, if trusts have identical beneficiaries and identical trustees, they are legally considered one trust. They're simply rolled up together.
Okay. And if someone is already in a revocable trust, what factors would they need to consider on deciding around whether or not they wanted to convert to an irrevocable common law trust?
I suggest in the famed Benjamin Franklin T-square, advantages, disadvantages, list them. Basically, the big advantage to the irrevocable common law trust is privacy. It's a major advantage. And that endures beyond anything else. In other words, there's a trend in Western Europe and North America to strip you of all your financial and every other bit of privacy. And since the powers that be wish to do that, I think it's real smart and wise to say, is this really a good idea?
This comes to the end of our time for this episode. Please go to inspirehealthpodcast.com and listen to the remainder of this important episode. Thank you so much.